All right, let's learn. We're up to the Malbim. Let's take a look at the Malbim. The Malbim is on page. The Malbim is on page 883. The Zoy Shein is Tasu. The Zoy Shein is Tasu. Okay, 883, Pasuk Gimel. Pasuk Perek Beis, Pasuk Gimel. The Zoy Shein is Tasu. Chutz Mizet Tasu, Ovein Acher, Masha Anoshim, Ho Ivrios, Chem Unois, Tachas Yad Anochios. Okay, this is the second sin. The second sin is that the Noshim, the Jewish women, they are Mu'unois. Okay, to marry. This is the Noshim of Yos, they are Mu'unois, they are being afflicted, tortured. Tachas, they're being subjugated. Tachas Yad Anochios. They are covering the mizbeach with tears. Ubichi wasn't on earlier, and they are covering the mizbeach with tears. They're tsar. They cry in the mizbeach. And the Malbim is similar to Radak, that it does not mean over here that there's so many tears that there's a flood, but it means over here that Kadosh Baruch Hu is saying that in Adin, that I know in Shemaim, the Malachim, there's a kitroik against you, and there's no place for you, for me to accept your tefillos. K'mo she'amar Shlomo b'tefillosai, asher yecheto ish l'ri'eyu, v'nosa voy olo, uvo olo l'fnei mizbachacho, v'ato tishma ha'shemaim. A person does an Aveira, and he swears falsely. It's a similar idea. I think it's like a question mark. He's saying a very interesting idea. When the person does an Aveira, the Aveira makes its way to the Mizbeach. Okay, this is a very esoteric idea. And all is a curse. Well, the Nasa Vayola, I'm not sure about it.
I understand that, but here.
In this context, I'm not sure what the exact nature of the sin, but that's not the point. The point is a person does an Avera. Somehow, the Avera, it comes to rest on the Mizbeach. So when a person goes to the Mizbeach doing a Karban to find favor in Hashem's eyes, or to ask Hashem for forgiveness, that makom he's prevented, because the location where he's going to attempt to seek forgiveness and to come close to Hashem, that same exact makom is the Aveira is resting there. The Aveira is resting that on that location. So there's an ikuf. There is a it's prevented. The blockage. But
see, because he's pointing out that the Avera is between Ishta Vayeha.
Okay, no,
so asking for forgiveness from Hashem, that is blocked by the fact that it's made Adam L'Chavero.
Correct. The Avera in Adam L'Chavero is Ma'akev a Teshuva bin Adam L'Mokoyim. That's a very basic idea, that Hashem was only willing to forgive sins when Adam L'Makom relative, which is equal to the degree that man appeases his fellow man in Adam L'Chaver. Absolutely correct. But it's interesting is that this concept, never heard this concept before, and it's saying over here that what it says over here in the Pasuk over here is equivalent to what Shlomo Melech says, is that a person's Averois, they have a resting place. The resting place is on the Mizbeach. I mean, we never heard that before. We always see the person, a person, he does see the da'afim, he does teshuva, he's mispalo. When a person is mispalo, so if he is guilty of doing averos, so he has a problem. He has a problem that in Shemayim they're not going to accept his teshuva because he has committed averos. Here in these two psukim, in this pasuk over here now, section over here, and what he's bringing that from Malachim, Shlomo Melech, is that the averos that a person commits, they find a resting place upon the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach is where the Averos are resting, and the person who is trying to come close to Hashem, he comes to bring Korbanos on the Mizbeach. And there is a problem. There is an ikuf. there is blockage, like what you said. Okay, let's go further. In the Malbim, the Malbim then says, Pasuk Yudalid, Ve'amartem al mo, Madua cheid ze gadol kol kach. Why is the sin of marrying a non-Jewish woman, why is it so severe? The meishiv meishiv al ki heyin Hashem b'incho v'in eishes l'lecha. The answer is because Hashem has a testimony regarding you, between you and your wife. Shashem hu ha'ed b'neichem, Hashem is the witness. Im batchila Hashem, im batchila, Hashem hu ha'ed al ha'kishurim. First of all, Hashem is a witness on the band, the knot that was made between you and your wife when you married her, with chuba v'kiddushim lufnei Hashem, who aid kinas adav b'farav, and he is a witness of what you have done now. V'im ato who aid v'hamash, is a witness that you married her. V'im ato who aid v'hamash b'cho al ki ato v'gad tavo. You are a betrayer. Ve'avart alma she'nikasharta l'negda. You've married another woman. V'hi lo yibog debach b'cho, and she did not do anything to deserve this. It's a one-way avera. You have betrayed her, but she did not betray you. Lo yibedivrei matzum b'diva. She did not quarrel with you. She does not fight with you. Ki hi chaver techa. V'lo yishebagat liznos me'acharei isha with another husband. Another husband, and we turn to the next page. Another husband, ki hi eishes b'risecha, v'loi mo'ala mal b'bris ha'isha. Saying a beautiful idea in the Malbim. The Malbim here says the reason why this repetition here is because the reason why this repetition, we discussed yesterday in the Radak, there are three expressions. There is eishes ni'urecha, there is ki chaver techa, and number three, there is eishes b'risecha. So yesterday we had one mahalach in the Radak, and now we have in the Malbim an entirely different approach. And in this approach, we are explaining that a wife, Hashem is the witness. Hashem is the witness that you married her. It's interesting. A person gets married, there are two witnesses sign the document. They can die the next day. It makes no difference. Maybe you can make an argument that the marriage is only in existence as long as the witnesses are alive. Once the witnesses die, so why don't you say the document is null and void? Here's a shachidish. Say that the marriage is only active as long as the witnesses are around. The witnesses die, it expires. So young people also, Rahman al-Sahib, can pass away. So then if a person wants to remain married to a woman, he has to get new witnesses. Are the witnesses the life force of the wedding? Now people say, you know, these are very spooky things. They are very mocked, but who is the sandik? And a bris mila, this is a tradition. There's a concept that the sandik somehow has influence on the child. And if the sandik of the baby is a very big tzaddik, for real, then the child, you know, goes in that way. If the tzaddik, the person takes as a tzaddik, you know, a person that's not such a good person, and he had, for whatever the reasons why he took him, there's the danger that the child cannot, you know, not have the siyata d'shmaya to succeed, to be who he's meant to be. Is there any truth to that? Well, you know, this is something which is very esoteric, this is something which is very, like, you know, spiritual. But there are a lot of stories like this. There are stories What?
It's limited to
once
per family, isn't that right?
Okay, that's a big topic of discussion. The truth is no. It's a very, very weak, source to say that you cannot give the son the curse to the same person twice. Extremely, a number of years ago we spoke about it. I don't even know where I saw this. An analysis of where does this custom come from, not to give sandukos to the same person twice, and it's very, very weak.
I think I recall my father has told me that the universal lozer was a sandik by twins, and he was the maya.
Everything.
You
sit down, right?
Sit down with the two kids,
and he did it while he's sitting with the kid on the lap. He did it while he's on the lap.
What usually the try to do it separately, so there are two brachas.
Well, you don't. You are. That's another. In oisim mitzvahs chavilas chavilas.
Right. Right. I don't know. What is the reason?
He did what he did it at the same time. The two kids.
I don't know.
There's a machloikis. There's a big machloikis. How do you do it? Today they don't do the same time. That's another topic. There are different opinions how to do it. You make one bracha and you do both kids, or you make two bracha. But the way it's done today is completely simple. But that's not so simple. Not everyone agrees to that. There's a big machlokes apoyskim how to do it. Today, I don't know what they do. In our community, the way it's done is you do completely separate. I don't know the kibbutzim. You even go to during Corona, this
who
last year.
Who invented this chayka business?
You know, what? No.
You pass the kid around from the machaber.
Hagoshes. Hagoshes.
It's called a chayka.
A chayka?
Yeah, I don't know why it's called a chayka.
Hagoshes.
Okay, so what is the hagoshes?
It's a makeup, make believe kibbutz. A make you want to own and sell something. You bring the baby closer and closer. Look in the base by a carbon, there is the halacha. There's shechita, kabbalah, halacha. Halacha is one of the four avodas. Walking towards the mizbeach is one of the four major avodas of bringing a carbon. If a kohen has a kavana shlo l'shma, or for the wrong person during the hagasha, then the carbon is pasul. It's pasul. So enochinami, there is something to it. Okay, but put that on the side. Over here, he's saying a very interesting idea. He's saying that you have a marriage, and first of all, he's saying is that no, when a person gets married, they're witnesses. So where are the witnesses? Rashi in Parashas Hazinu really says this idea. Rashi Hazinu Hashmai Va'adabera V'sishmaritz Imrefi. So Rashi says when a person gets married, there are two witnesses. That Hashem is calling which witnesses? The Shemayim and the Oretz. Moshe is calling the Shemayim Oretz. Why? Because the Shemayim and the Oretz are around forever. They do not disappear. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I'm not going to be around. I'm going to leave this world. And the only one that's going to be left is going to be the Shemayim and the Oretz. They will be here forever, and they will always be able to give, to say testimony that you've done, I've warned you, and if you do Averos, you're going to suffer. So why does Moshe need the Shemayim and the Oretz? Why does the Moshe say, listen, I warned you, I am a witness. The people here are a witness. Who cares that there are going to be witnesses allowed around in 1,000 years from now? Who cares? As long as there are witnesses today, that's more than enough. Just like when it comes to marriage, a person gets married. He must marry a woman in the presence of two witnesses. If the two witnesses die the very next day, it has no effect. The marriage remains forever. So why does Moshe Rabbeinu looking for witnesses that are going to be around forever and ever? So you see from Parashas Hazinu, you see that there are two different types of witnesses. There are witnesses that are here, which create a kinyan. That's one level, but there's a higher level of a witness where the witness endures. The witness remains around for a very, very long time, and that witness somehow gives the process a life, a different dimension. And Hashem over here is saying that Hashem over here, when it comes to marriage, you know why the marriage is still in effect? Because I am a third witness. Al pishnayim o shloisha edim yakum davar. Why does the Torah have to say in Shnayim, Lama Nemash Shloisha? Everyone remember the Gemara in Makkos? The Gemara asks the question, why does the Torah say help you Shnayim, Oy, Shloisha Edim Yakum Davar? By two witnesses or by three witnesses will the matter be established? The Gemara's question is, if you only need two witnesses, so why does the Gemara Pasuk in the Torah mention three witnesses? So the Gemara gives an answer, a technical answer, to teach you that if three witnesses are appointed to observe something, then they cannot be called Edim Zaymimim until all three witnesses are declared, are proven to be false, Imanu Hayisem. That's a technical answer. But based upon what we're learning of, yeah?
Rabbi.
Yes?
I think the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu made the heavens and the earth witnesses is because they're not only witnesses, they're also enforcers.
Enforcers.
If you keep the Torah and Mitzvot, the earth will give you, will produce for you your crops, and the Hashemayim will be your rain.
They'll come to punish you. Okay, so you say they're not really witnesses then. They're not really witnesses. You say the Shemayim and the Aretz are going to be like the Shoftim. The Shoftim and the Shoftim.
They're also enforcers.
Okay, I hear you. The different idea. I hear. Okay. I understand what you're saying. I hear. A regular witness cannot enforce anything. Regular witness just can testify. The one that has the power to enforce and punish is the Beis Din. Okay, Rashi over here is saying something very fascinating. The Malbim is Hashem says, I am a witness at your wedding. When you marry this woman under the chuppah, who are the witnesses? Okay, so you look on the shtar. Who is the witness? You read the handwriting. These are the witnesses. Over here, the post, I don't care about those witnesses. Hashem says, I am also a witness. Don't make a mistake and think that since the witnesses are long gone, person gets married, the mechabit, you know, chashuvim, zakenim, kosher Jews, people know it's the most choshev kibbut. The most choshev kibbut at a wedding is to be a witness. Because if the next morning, the morning after the wedding, the Masader Kiddushin is on the front page of the New York Times as being the biggest ganef, the biggest swindler, and the biggest criminal, guess what? The marriage is a good marriage. But if the next morning after the wedding you discover that the witness was arrested for a scandal, he didn't pay his taxes, then it could very well be that the marriage was not a kosher marriage. You have to go get do over the ceremony. Okay, the people who are the only people who count at a wedding are the witnesses. They must be kosher Jews. The Mesader Kiddushin doesn't have to be, even though he's all Roman, the biggest Galadar, the Tzaddik, he does not need to be necessarily squeaky clean in order to create the marriage. The ones that need to be squeaky clean are the witnesses. I told you this many times. There was a wedding and they called up one of a Rosh Kotel, a very distinguished person, who was a Rosh Kotel, head of whatever it was, to be a witness. And he refused. He said, I don't want to be a witness because I have a koilel, I have a whole network of koilelim, and I collect a lot of money. I'm a collector. And I pay all the people in the koilel, I have a whole network of koilelim, I pay people in the koilel. He said, it's not possible that I'm not a ganef. That's what he basically said. He says, I collect money from people with the understanding that I'm going to be giving the money to people who are sitting and learning Torah. And because there are so many people involved in this enterprise, it's inevitable that some of the money that I distribute are people who really should not be getting a koilel check. They don't show up enough, and when they come to Beis Medrash, they're not learning. Listen, everyone's entitled to take a cup of coffee and schmooze a little bit, but you know, there's a limit to how much you can bottle. And not everyone in my network, can I tell you with certainty, deserves the check that I'm giving him. And I go to donors and I beg them for money and I tell them that Choshev Yungalai will learn the learning Torah, and I take money and I give the money. That's just the way it is. So I really am concerned that I'm a ganef. And a ganef is pasul le'edus. So therefore, if there's anyone here in this room that cannot be a witness under the chuppah, it's me. I'll be the Messiah of the Kedushin if you want. I'll take Baruch Achrita. But I do not want to be a witness. I really am afraid that I have taken money shaloi kedin. I'm a ganef. Isn't that an amazing statement? The person can say that. He has integrity to say that. So over here, Hashem says. So Hashem over here says, listen, I'm a witness. I was by your wedding. I'm a witness, and I'm always around. And therefore, the fact that I'm always around. If you want to make this type of idea that I just told you, that think about it, if you need witnesses to establish an event, whether it's marriage, whether it's divorce, whether it's a legal transaction, a financial legal transaction, you need witnesses. So what does that mean? How do you understand that in Lomdus? Does that mean that the witnesses, the fact that they exist in this world and they've signed their names, that is what gives the transaction power? It gives it legs to stand on. And that can, you can come to the conclusion that if the witnesses disappear, the witnesses cease to exist, then the lifeblood of this transaction or this kinyan, it evaporates. Is that correct to say? Obviously not. But why not? Why not? Or do you say, no, the witnesses, they affect a transaction and that's it. It's over. The witnesses are done. They're no longer necessary. Here, Hashem says, I'm telling you a Jewish, who's the third witness? Hashem. Hashem is the third, because Hashem is in existence forever. So there are two human beings that affect the transaction at the moment, but the concept that the witnesses have to endure forever in order to give the transaction a life, you need a witness that will outlive the people involved, the principals involved in the transaction. And who is that? Hashem. And it says that explicitly here in this pasuk. Go to a wedding, mechubed, Mr. So-and-so, and so-and-so with Eide Kedushin. They're wrong. There's a third witness. Next time you go to a wedding, you have to get up, let's say 600 people have the chuppah, and the mechubed so-and-so is so make a scene. You get up, stand on the chair. I could just see Mayor doing this. Gets up on the chair and he starts screaming, excuse me, there's a third witness here. The Ribbono Shel Olam. And they're like, what? What are you talking about? Hashem is not a witness at this wedding. Yes, he is. Look what it says in Malachi, Perek Beis, Pasuk Yudalet. Ki Hashem he'id beinecha uvein eishes ne'urecha. Hashem is the witness.
Could be that's why they stand.
Right. Why they stand by the chuppah? Really, they should sit. Right. It's a big mystery as to why they sit. Because if I'm not mistaken, they sit. It's a ma'isa bezdin. But maybe you're right. Maybe that's why they take a stand. I don't know. It seems when I've read that in previous generations, they sat by weddings. They sat. The Chosin Kala, they sat in front of the Dayan. And they did it to the Kiddush in front of the Dayanim. It was a Ma'aseh Bezdin. I don't know, but over here, Hashem over here is a witness. It says, "Beferish Neposik Ki Hashem Heid Bein Chovin Eishes Nurecha." Hashem is the witness that you marry. Don't go say, "Listen, the witnesses are gone. Who is this woman here? I have nothing to do with her. The marriage expired. The marriage is over." I remember on the radio once, listening on the radio in the car, there was a woman who called in. Who is the famous radio conservative? Bob Grant?
That's way back.
Way back, right? I think it was Bob Grant. It's way back. He died, Bob Grant, right? I think it was him. And a woman called in and she was starting about marriage. And he said, I think the law should be that after 7 years, it's over. Marriage is only for 7 years.
Term limits,
yeah. When a man, they get married, it's just 7 years. And then after 7 years, they go their own way. And if they want to get married again, because they're into hate. But it should expire after 7 years. She was darshing about this idea. 7 year itch, right? After 7 years, it's just naturally. The marriage is not a bond forever. It's just 7 years. Now, that's a very interesting idea because of witnesses. You have witnesses. The witnesses are not going to be around forever. So it makes a lot of sense that something, there's a swab that a transaction, something that is achieved through that you need witnesses, as long as the witnesses exist, then this event is alive. Proof being, I know Tzvi does not agree with me on this point, but Hazinu Hashemayim Baretz, Moshe Rabbeinu, when he warned the Jewish people that they should observe the Torah and the mitzvos, he summoned the Shemayim and the Aretz. And Rashi there says, they're around forever. I'm gone tomorrow. They're around forever. So you see this idea that it is an advantage that the witnesses who are responsible for this this event existing should be around forever. As long as they're around, then this act, whatever you're trying to achieve, is in effect. When they're gone, it's no longer in effect. Obviously, that's not true. That's not that what I'm saying is obviously halacha nonsense. But why is it nonsense? So you have to understand that then this pasuk comes in and adds another element that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also a witness. It's not just human beings who are a witness. Hashem is also a witness. And Hashem is around forever. And it says it explicitly here in this pasuk. Ki Hashem hei ben cho ben eishes nurecha. The Malbim says, Hashem, I am the witness. Don't go say that the woman, you said, what did we do wrong? We married another woman? Listen, our first marriage expired. It's over. The seven-year itch. It's over. It expired. So I'm entitled now to take a second wife. Hashem said, it didn't expire. I'm around. Maybe the witnesses who signed, who were under the chuppah, maybe they died. They're not around. But I'm around. And I'm still going to say testimony that you're married to this woman. And my existence is enough to keep your marriage alive and well during this time. Ki Hashem heyid ben cho ben eishes nu'urecha. Asher ato bogad tabo. You have betrayed her. And this is a very beautiful idea that only the Malbim says this. Is your wife did nothing to you. Number one. She never lifted a finger to you. She never hit you. Chavertecha. She did not do anything, any strife. She never burnt your food. She never lifted a finger to you. She never insulted you. She never did anything physically damaging to you. The Eishes Birisecha, she never betrayed you by living with another man. So chavertcha refers to domestic policy, and eishes b'risach is foreign policy. Your wife is good to you at home, and she is loyal to you with matters of ishus, of marriage. That's a novel idea. No one said that. Not the Mitzudis, not Rashi, not the Radak. The Malm is the one that is taking these two expressions, chavertcha, in reference to dealing with your wife and relating to matters, domestic matters, food, clothing, shelter, v'chul, and fighting, insulting you, and brisecha is marriage. Okay, let's go further. Next, let's just read those words on the top of the page. Page 8, right now, this is where we're up to 885, so we're up to v'hi chavertcha. She was your friend from time immemorial. I'm reading the Radak. I made a mistake. We need to go back in the bottom. So we're done. We're done with this. We are up to Pasuk Tes Vav in the Malbim. We are now on page 885, Pasuk Tes Vav. V'loy echad asa usha'ar. The Malbim is going to Adam Harishon, and this is what it said in the Targum. Almost everyone on the page over here, when it says the word Echad, use this, interpret this in reference to Avraham Avinu. That's not the direction of the Malbim. The Malbim says V'lo Echad Asa Ushar, Mevi Roya Alcheta Mibzeh Mibrias HaAdam. Shehashem, kishabara es ha'adam, when Hashem made man, loy bira'am zachu nekevo nifradim zemi zekmo shabar yeser ba'alechayim, Hashem did not make Adam and Chava as two separate creatures like he made animals. Animals, it was an independent bria of the zachar and an independent creation of the nekeva. With regard to Adam, Hashem made man and woman as one body, and then he slices them down the center. Shashem kishabar has Adam loy b'ram zochu nekeva nifradim zeh mizeh kmo shabar yeser ba'alechayim ki Adam nivra techila levadoi v'chava levadoi v'chava hoysa achas mitzal v'esav. Chava was one of Adam's ribs. V'hoysa imo techila guf echad. They were originally one body. Kamoi Shom Chazal, du partsufim niv ru'u. They, du means two. Two faces they were created. In other words, it was one body, and on one side was man, and on the other side was a woman, and Hashem sliced them. V'zehu sha'amar v'chi loy echad osa u'sha'ar. Did Hashem not make man and woman as one body? Siamese twins. Better than Siamese twins. It's mamish back to back. U'sha'ar. Hashem osa es adam guf echad im she'eroi zo ishtoi. Now here is an incredible idea. He says the word sha'ar is flesh. No one said that. And then we had the whole discussion, the whole day we spent on this, is what does the word sha'ar mean? Does the word sha'ar mean better, or does it mean different? Now we have a new interpretation. Sha'ar means she'er bisaroi, which means, she'er means she'era kisusa ve'oinasa lo yigra. So she'er means really food. Okay, she'er, in this context it means flesh. She'er, food. Food. And here it says she'eroi zo ishtoi. It's she'er b'saroi. The Gemara makes a drasha. In Masechta Yevamos, the word she'er is a code word for, it means flesh. The Gemara says, what's the etymology of how the word she'er comes to woman? I do not know. But the Gemara here is saying, it's in the Gemara Masechta Yevamos, that the word she'era kisusav yanasolo yigra, she'er, the word she'er means a wife. Shneim hayu, she'er is a relative. Close, you're right, saying the person's closest relative is his wife. Shneihem hayu mechubadim yachad be'ez shenasa adam, ve'asa ruach loy l'ha adam im ha'sha'or ha'davik imo, hayu ruach echad. It's an amazing Kabbalistic concept. A person's wife shares his neshama. It's one neshama. It's not just they have this come from the same flesh. It's not just that the original man was created with one body, and one body that was that in the front was the man, back was the woman. Or some will say the other way around. Some will say that the front was the woman and the back was. Vayelach manoyach achare ishtar. Manoyach adam. People like to say that, you know, that man and woman, it was one guf. Who was in the front? Who was in the back? So people, oh, the man goes first. Achoyri ari veloy achoyri isha. Better go before a lion than go before. I once opened the door for a woman who I was certain did not know a word of Hebrew. And I opened the door very graciously. And I said to this woman, yeah, this is why I did this. I once opened the door for a woman. And I said very graciously, achoyri ari veloy achoyri isha. Better go before a lion than go before the woman's like, what does that mean? So I said, it means in Hebrew it means ladies first. It means just the opposite. It means ladies go last. Better walk in front of go in front of a lion, or better walk behind a lion. Achor means back. Walk behind a lion than walk behind a woman. Never let a woman go first. Never. So I said this to a woman. I opened up the door. Achoyre ari veloy achoyre isha. What does that mean? Ladies first. So Meir doesn't believe me. Would I go take a risk and say this to a woman? Well, guess who the woman was? My sister. To her I can say it. What? No, she didn't know it. What does that mean? Ladies first. It means ladies last. Try that on a date. Okay? The girls get very insulted if you don't open the door to them. Car. Tuck them in nice and snug. You put them in, go first, you know? You gently close the door. What do you mean? You learned in the Gemara. Whatever it says in the Gemara, you leave in the Beis Medrash. Not when you go out into the real world. All right, I'm just joking around here with you. But it says this very, very profound idea that how he learns from the Pasuk, the Asa Ruach Lelo Adam Im Ashar Davik Imoha Yeruch Echad, there's one spirit. It's not just, so I was telling you that there's one guf.
So that by translating,
yourself. Of course, that's everything in life is like that. You shoot yourself in the foot. Okay, when you cause someone else harm, you're just causing yourself harm. It'll come back to haunt you. It'll boomerang. So Adam, who's in the front? Who's in the back? So the average person says Adam was in the front and Chav was in the back. Who says? How do you know that? Look at Manoach. It says Vayelech Manoach Acharei Ishtoi. So by Manoach there's also one guf, and Manoach was in the back, and his wife was in the front. So who's in the front? Who's in the back? Weiter. The Asar Ruach Lodom in Mashar Hadavikimo, how you Ruach Echad Beofen, Sheshneim Nivru, they were both created as Bosar. We have to now turn to the page over here, page 887. Echad Ruach, Echad Vruach, Echad, one spirit. Loi ki Yeser Balechayim, Shayushnaim, Bain Bebosar, Bain Beruach. So by saying it in the very end, this gives you a whole lot and understanding when it comes to the teva. Noach was instructed like shnayim mikol achai. The teva, the marble, to save the world. Noach was instructed to take two. What's that two? Because Zohar and Akeva are really completely two independent creatures. They have no connection between one another. Just an arrangement. They live together. They're completely two separate entities, not just in the body, but in the neshama as well. Whereas, when it comes to Kval Yisrael, Ish v'Isha, man and woman, it says over here, it says that the lama asa kain, the lama lebara gamas adam taketh immediately mifu mufradim ish v'ishtoi. Chulalame, to teach you, Shabbas zugoy shel adam, the bazug of an adam. Mir, you log on. Is that you? Shabbas zugoy shel ha adam, tzarech shetiyeh doy meloy, because the person's zug has to be similar. Umisachede simot, to be one bein levasa shetiyeh miimor mibes avoysav, that he should be from his own family. You know what he says over here? That a person should marry his relatives. Okay, Hasidim, they do this still today. They marry their cousins. They do this, but it's not so simple, dangerous. Okay, it's not so healthy to do so, they say. To marry a relative. Okay, really the truth is the Jews, we are all marrying relatives. Anyone, all Ashkenazim are pretty much come from a very small pool of genes. And that's why Rahman was stunned, this did by this Tay-Sachs and other types of genetic diseases, because Jews marry Jews. And more often than not, Ashkenaz marries Ashkenaz. And being that we come from a very limited, small pool of genes, because we've been destroyed so many times, there's been so much Chorban, so there are medical issues. There are medical issues in amongst ourselves. But it says over here that he, according to the Malbim, I don't know what Shatchanim say. Everyone is obviously different. He says this is ideal. He says
it strengthens the
positive genes
too.
Does it?
Yeah, you see, smart people have kids who are smart people, right?
But that's smart. But there are other elements. I don't know. This you have to talk to the big doctors who know this stuff. Okay, this we discussed, that it's very important to have the same values in life. We discussed this later. This is a previous pasuk, good, way back. We discussed this. What does it teach us, this concept of oneness? Shetzarach liyos bein hazug, meshev, the answer is shehu, mevakesh zera elokim. She'al yidei ho'achdus shebineim, bebosar v'ruach, al yidei ze hazera sheyivoleid min hazug, haze yihye zera elokim, vil loy zera kilayim shatneis. Look what he's saying. Where do you see such ideas like this? This is a real novel words that when people married from different faiths, or they marry, they really have nothing in common. This is shatnes. It's like shatnes. Kizera habehema she'en shaymim hayichus va'achtus. It's like animals. They have no concept of hayichus. Ra kizera adam harishayin shaholu b'demusa b'tzalma b'tzim alukim. The ideal shidduch is the first shidduch. The first shidduch in the world was Adam and Chava. Adam and Chava were created one guf, one body, one ruach, one spirit, and they were split into two, and then they came back together in marriage.
But so, animals, I don't understand why he brings in animals. Animals tend to stay
their own kind. But we're talking about, but a male and female are separate. In their own kind, there's no, they'll marry an animal, they put an animal with another animal of its own kind. Mm-hmm. It's not going to check into the yichus. Are you a mamzer? Are you a nesin? Are you a ger? An animal is an animal. They don't look into yichus. But people, human beings, he's telling us over here is that the ideal is Adam Harishon. Adam Harishon was one guf. So the more a person can emulate Adam by marrying someone who is a relative, basically, that is theoretically what he's suggesting to be the ideal. That from the same physical body, the same physical stock, and of course, because you're from a family, you have the same values in life. If you're a satma chassid, so marry a satma girl. Don't go out. What are you looking for trouble? You're not going to go marry a tzioni. You're just going to sit and fight the whole day. And someone's a tzioni, marry a tzioni. This is what the Malbum says. And he goes so far to say that if you marry a different kind, it's shatnes. And the goal is to go back to Adam Harishon. Now, obviously, this is something, well, first of all, obviously, we just mentioned before, that obviously today in the world of science, medicine, they don't like this. This is something which is not a healthy thing, obviously. They're not very fond of people marrying our cousins. Okay, it's not in society. It's I don't know. It's looked down upon. It's not healthy. Maybe Dr. Friedman, you can fill us in on this. Dr. Friedman, what do they say today about marrying a cousin, marrying a first cousin? What do doctors say? First of all, is it legal in the United States of America? Is it legal to marry a first cousin?
Yeah,
it's legal. Yeah.
And what
do doctors say? What do doctors say about health issues to marry your first cousin?
I mean, you increase your risk for hereditary conditions. But now with the testing that goes on, it makes it relatively safe.
Really? Interesting.
That's my opinion. I don't know if that's the universally held opinion.
It's very interesting. I know that by Hasidim, certain they do this all the time. They marry cousins, first cousins, second cousins, and in certain groups there are health issues. There really are. It's their health issues, and the doctors say it's pasha. The reason why this family is suffering is because they didn't test. I guess he's saying they didn't do their homework, their due diligence.
Other illnesses that are not strictly inherited on a genetic basis, in other words, an autosomal recessive or an autosomal dominant, there are other things that come together that we don't know about, and maybe they see it that way.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that everything is strictly genetic.
You're really hitting the nail on the head, because I work a lot with hearing impaired deaf people. And I spoke to a very big person.
Dr. Velez is speaking. If you don't think you can hear, Velez is talking about.
Within the drunk community, there is a tremendous amount of hearing loss. Unbelievable. So many children having hearing aids and cochlear implants. And I always thought it was because from people that have more children, so therefore you have the possibility of having, he said, no. He said, our marriage pool is very small. Exactly what you said, by the guy in your face, Italian married, Irish, black, white, Chinese, but we're very, very small, and He said a lot of these people who have hearing and hear children, they could be second or third cousins. They don't
really
realize it. You don't realize it.
People don't realize that they're saying there's a lot of, there's a very high degree of hearing loss in the Jewish community. Yeah.
Because the hearing loss is a sign of chachma.
What does it say that?
What?
Where do you get it? All right, so you say that in the Jewish community, Rabbi Lezi works. Yeah.
For that, you don't need genetic testing. If you see that the person is deaf, you don't need a test for that.
Yeah, but
you can notice in the way.
Okay. Yeah, but sometimes there are, obviously there are things that just spring up. You didn't realize. You things happen.
And he said when you marry close, you bring up hidden genes.
When you marry close relatives, you bring out hidden genes, hidden defects.
Ordinarily, the other person would cover up.
Right, one would cover.
So even though it's it's not dominant, it's negative. But if both people have the negative, then it will come up.
Usually, the negative gene is recessive, so it can stay hidden and unknown and undetected for many generations. But when two people
the same kind, they come in.
That recessive gene, things happen.
Ashkenazim specifically have a lot of issues because Ashkenazim, we all come from, I think, very few families. But during the First Crusade, Ashkenaz was wiped out. Ashkenazim are all descendants of a very, very small pool of genes. And because throughout the generations we've all pretty much married each other, it creates issues. All right, I mean, whatever, Hashem, you know, Shemer Pisoyim Hashem. To what degree is a person going to go, do all the today we have tools. Today, Baruch Hashem, you know, there's an incredible advancement in this field of genetic. They don't, you know, Dor Yisharm doesn't just test anymore for Tay-Sachs. They test a whole slew of things. They now have, and it depends. I think you can, and if you don't want to go to Dor Yisharm, you can go to a private laboratory. You go to other private places, whatever, and you can get a whole workup. But the problem.
Those are all sicknesses that depend on an abnormal gene, generally a single gene. But there are conditions that just don't depend on one gene.
Right.
And, you know, things like autism or certain other neurological conditions, maybe the deafness that he's talking about, also, those things are not obvious. And maybe those could be avoided by marrying a close relative.
But then it creates a whole. I mean, this is the big argument, big debate. Like you know, how far do you go? How far should you know? Shidduchim is obviously a very, very difficult parasha for many people, and when you start limiting, even further limiting, your options with testing, and this and that, it makes a difficult situation almost impossible. So how far do you go? And then what happens if they get engaged? Boy and girl get engaged. And then they, we didn't do the testing yet. So they go for testing. And they discover something. Now, let's say they discover something which is in the middle. You know, what are the chances? They'll tell you the chances are 20%, 30%. What do you do? So you tell them they shouldn't get married? That's very, very dangerous. The effect of breaking up an engagement can be catastrophic.
That's why they should test before they get
married. Right, right. They should. So let's say they didn't. Let's say a shidduch came up.
So I had what's called my sister-in-law had a student in college. She was Sardi, and they got to get engaged. When they got tested, and they were not a match. And the rabbi, the Sardi rabbi, still they cannot get married.
So they separated, right? They broke the engagement.
Yeah, there's no choice. Yeah.
They broke the and then they both no they choice. Both got married. They
he
both
was,
got.
He was, I don't know what happened. He was in law school. He dropped out. Yeah, I don't know. He's heartbroken.
Heartbroken. It's not so easy to recover from this. Time is not on your side. Okay, a lot of the people who have problems with shidduchim is because they were heartbroken, and it takes a very, very long time to heal a heart, and it's a very So what do you do? What do you do? I don't know. Who knows? On the other hand, you can get married. You want to go have tsaras. The person has a terrible tsaras whole life.
What?
They test the baby when
the goyim do that.
Jews do it also. The Jews do whatever the goyim do. So are you allowed to? I mean, these are big shilas. Some of them, sometimes they say they do allow abortion. I mean, it depends at what point, obviously, at what stage, at what stage. These are you know, dvarim ha'im din berumay shalaylam. Big, you know, of David Cohen. He's very, I think, very, very knowledgeable in this field about of David Cohen. People need poiskim for the, you know, the halahah. What do you? I don't know, but over here the Malbim is saying a very shocking thing. Not shocked, but the Malbim is saying an approach, and he's saying is the ideal shidduch is to marry your own kind, from your own family and from your own hashkafa, which. There's no question it's a controversial statement, because there are many shadchanim that will tell you it doesn't work. You have to marry someone different, not totally different. They will claim that many people have personalities. It's not, you know, can't generalize. There are many people who a shidduch works a lot better if they're very different. Rav Pam, everyone knows, they write this up in the book, this is public knowledge. Rav Pam and his wife were complete opposites. Complete opposites. Mikotze elakotze. And Abraham said the biggest bracha he has in his life is his wife. Because if not for his wife, he would be doomed. His wife, Abraham was a very able person. He could never say no to anyone. He was very, very, you know, his wife was a fighter, was a fierce person. She didn't take any nonsense. And she protected him, didn't let people, you know, step all over him. And her palm acknowledged, if not for his wife, he wouldn't be able to get to first base. So it's very different personality. Now you say personality is not mishpacha. So you say, sir, Michal is saying compliments of one another. Each one fills in for the chesronus of the other person. That's not really what the Malbim is saying. He's splitting hairs here. The Malbim over here is saying is be like the idealist of the Adam and Chava. And what was Adam and Chava? They were one body and one ruach. That one ruach, in my understanding, means one everything, one personality, one. A ruach means like, you know, it's like this is who you are. And Hashem took a sharp knife, split them down the center. The Adam and Chava, they get married. So you can't do that today. You can't go marry a brother and sister. That's chiv karis. That's aser. But whatever you can do closest to that, that's ideal. First cousin, marry first cousins. Is that really a good idea to marry a first cousin? You deal with your family the whole day. Some people can't stand their family. They have to run away to someone else's family. Can you go out of your mind if you stick around with your family the whole day, okay? And some people don't, you know, they don't like looking in the mirror. I don't want to go look at my wife. I look at my wife. She looks just like me. I don't want to look in the mirror the whole day. I want to look at someone different, okay? If I'm a stingy person, I need someone to be generous, you know, to buy me some nice things to enjoy this world. And if I'm a gambler, I give away all my money. I'm going to be in the street. I need someone to do my accounting, my, you know, to keep me in check. In my, that's not ruach echad. That's shtei ruchos. So the Malam over here is saying something which is obviously has to be taken in context, and speak to the professionals. Okay, there are people who devote their entire life to these type of things, and they'll tell you obviously different strokes for different folks. Some people this works, some people that works. But you can't really generalize. Oh, genetic disorders among Jewish people. If Dr. Friedman over here is showing us a book, genetic disorders among Jewish people, it's a big book. Wow, it's a thick book. So many genetic diseases. I just thought it was only one disease. liberalism. And the whole picked up. Michael Savage, quote from the Gedolim Hadar. Michael Savage, liberalism is a mental disorder.
The Hasidim are notorious for
that. Right, we said that. The Hasidim marry cousins. They marry cousins. They marry, what is it? Uniquely genetic cousins emerge. He's showing us an article over here.
This way you have less rebels to be the
resistance. I don't know. It's hard to imagine. You need an escape. You need an escape. You go to marry your own family. You go out of your mind. You marry your own family. Okay, let's go further. This is definitely a controversial idea, and he has no. He doesn't hold back. He says this is how it is. Listen to over here. I'm finishing up over here towards the end of the Malbim, 87.
The Shema Hashem Suleim, they say, you know, that the Moshe said this is one of the cigarettes before the Surgeon General came out.
There's a limit. The Malkam Shehezi.
All bets are off.
All bets are off. What are the parameters of Shomer Pesayim Hashem? Hashem watches the fools. What are the parameters of that? Okay, that's the Sugya Dovar. Mayim she'en lechem soif. And how do you define shomer pesayim Hashem? Look today, what's going on with mandates, with mask mandates and vaccine mandates all over the world. Look at Australia. Australia, it's abamish, mind-boggling. Mind-boggling what's going on over there. You know, it's there's no such thing in Australia as shomer pesayim Hashem. There's no such thing. You know, every breath of air you take is measured.
What's the
one
in Australia?
Australia, go on the news. Australia, okay, there's nothing else.
So, you have to cast a rather wide
net. Whatever,
not Australia.
In Australia, they're very strict COVID, they're very concerned about COVID to a degree that the world has never seen. You basically can't walk out of your house, maybe for an hour, and if there are too many people living in your home, you have to move, you have to separate. You go on the news, the extreme chumras, like you never even could imagine or humanly possible. And we're in New Zealand? It's even worse in New Zealand. There was one person.
One case.
It was one case. How many, what's the population of New Zealand?
I don't know.
Australia, 25 million people in New Zealand, in Australia.
New Zealand is a lot smaller.
One person was diagnosed with COVID. They shut down, lockdown the whole country. How many people live in New Zealand? I don't know. Not that many, I would assume. But Australia, there are 25 million people. That's a lot of people. 25 million people. And there's no such thing in Australia as Shomer Pesayim Hashem. Don't take any chances. No chances taken. Zero. Where do you draw the line? It's Mamish Nagia now. Talk about all the mandates. You know, the country, you know, it's a very divided country about these things. And what is the country divided about? They're all fighting about the sugya.
New Zealand has 4.9 million people.
4.9 million people. One person was diagnosed with COVID. New York has 8 million people. New York City has a population of about 8 million people. 8 million people. So could you imagine New York City, let's make one person was diagnosed, came into the hospital, and they did a test, and he was positive. Okay? Shut down the entire city. No buses, no trains, no one's allowed to go to work, no one's allowed to be in the street, no one's allowed to do anything. Shut down, because we're afraid it will spread from this one person, whatever, it's out there. Is that statistic, halachically, what would if there was a Sanhedrin today, and they would tell us, what does the Torah say about this? There is such a principle in halacha called Shomer Pesayim Hashem. Define it. What are the numbers? You know, it's interesting. I watched a video. It was very fascinating. They had a very big symposium in Eretz Yisrael. They brought together 60. This goes back a month ago. They brought together 60 rabbanim, 60 dayanim, and they presented in front of them question what to do about COVID. In other words, it was primarily about the vaccine. And they presented them with basically world Zoom. 60 Rabbanim were in the room, and they had on Zoom Goyish doctors from all over the world. The pros and the cons. This all, the whole thing is recorded, you can get it online, the whole thing is recorded. It's a very long event. 60 Rabbanim, and Goyish doctors, the biggest of the, you know, the biggest of the big, and you know, all the tzaddim. What is the Psak Halach? So Dr. Zelenko, everyone knows him, he also spoke. So he asked the Rabbanim, he said, you know, millions and millions of people all over the world took the vaccine. And Baruch Hashem, I don't know the number, this is a while ago, so I don't, every day there's a new story. And you know, you can say this, whatever, but he says, let's just talk, the CDC has on record that about 12,000 people died. They, the people who are promoting it, they tell you that according to their records, 12,000 people died. Okay? And they say that that's a drop in the bucket. That's a mashu shebe mashu relative to the number of people that are taking the vaccines, and therefore, full steam ahead. So he said very respectfully, maybe they're right. I don't know. We're asking the dayanim, halacha. You are the talmidei chachamim. You are the dayanim. In halacha, what is the threshold? What is the number? There is danger in not taking the vaccine. There's a danger, and there's a danger in taking the vaccine. In the danger of not taking the vaccine, well, we know millions of people have died, a million people, whatever. You know, you can go. You have to go fight about all the different. But taking the vaccine. So it seems like they're right. You know, it seems like 12,000 people, relative to. So they're going to be korbanos. There's a war. In a war, when there's a war, there are korbanos. That's how it goes, right? That's how it goes. There's a mochemes mitzvah, a mochemes reshus. You go to war for a reason. You don't go to war for no reason. You go to war, and you go to war. There are korbanos. So in the Welt, in the world, it's an acceptable number. Okay, when the Pentagon discusses going into a country, going to Afghanistan, going to Iraq, they're going to be people. They're going to die. They're going to bring home their caskets. And there's going to be a whole spectacle. It's going to happen. That's the way the world goes. Is it worth it? Is it kedai? So governments, heads of state, and people, they sit down the whole day, they break their head, and they make calculations. Is the goal worth it? There's a war going on. People are dying right and left. People are getting sick. There's something terrible going on. We have over here something which supposedly is a Yeshua. And we know people are going to die. They're korbanos. Look, the CDC says there are 12,000. So he said to them, Rabbanim, the Welt says this is an acceptable number. What do you say in halacha? Is this an acceptable number? Paskin for us. Tell us, what do you say? I don't know what they say. I don't know what they say. But I watched this clip where we actually asked them, this is the number that they are giving us. We can fight about if it's a real number, if it's a lot more. Forget about that. Let's put that away. Let's not get into conspiracy, being accused of being a conspiracy theorist. Let's just focus on the facts that they present, and they tell us this is acceptable. We have a milchemes mitzvah, and this, they're going to be korbanos, and if we vaccinate the ganz klal Yisrael, people are going to die and get sick, but it's kedai. Otherwise, there will be no one left. We're all going to die. What do you Rabbanim say? What is the number? What was Zelenko asking the Beis Din? Define in numbers the halachic principle of Shomer Pesoyim Hashem. Define in numbers. Shomer Pesoyim Hashem doesn't mean you can jump off an airplane. Okay? Shomer Pesoyim Hashem, before it was accepted that smoking is dangerous. No, there are rumors. If you smoke, maybe you'll get sick. So Rav Moshe said, Shomer Pesoyim Hashem. I mean, years ago, no. Yeah, we talk here, there are people that get sick, they get sick. But most people, nothing happens to. No, Shomer Pisayim Hashem. Vayihi Hayoim, the statistics were compelling that this is serious business. If you smoke, you're going to die. All of a sudden, Shomer Pisayim Hashem out the window. You've already surpassed the threshold of Shomer Pisayim Hashem. So every day there are things like this. You go drive a car. Person drives a car, you know there are statistics. Okay? You drive, you go on a scooter, you buy for your child a scooter, you buy him a bicycle, you know there are statistics. Where do you draw the line? I have no idea. And a lot of the rabbanim also have no idea. A lot of the rabbanim, they're also scratching their heads. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. No one knows anything.
With the flu, there's no more statistics of what people died for.
There are statistics from the flu. Sure, there are statistics from the flu. The regular flu every year. They know how many people are going to do it approximately. They have last year's statistics to work with. The regular flu, the winter flu, all of its different. They know what the numbers are. They know how many people die from the flu. Mr. Phil Bloom is telling us that in 1918, the Spanish flu, 675,000 people died from the Spanish
in America
alone. And what was the population of America in 1918? Today, the population of America is 320 million. There are 320 million people living in this country. Then in 1918, I don't know what the population was. But he says that almost 700,000 people died. So this is scary stuff. This is no joke. Okay. From the flu, in the Spanish flu.
That was before there were air travel.
There was no air travel. See, all the variables. There was no air travel in those days. There's no air travel, so you're limited. You don't have to worry about people bringing it from other countries. From other locations.
It was throughout the world.
Even though it was throughout the world, but the mobility was severely less than today. Today people are, it's the global village today. Everyone is flying everywhere. You can't hold it back. It's almost impossible to prevent people from coming from all over the world. All right, but this is, let's finish up over here. This paragraph over here. Tishmar Surah Hatayva, the Ash Nurech Al Yivgoid. I'm reading the Mount, page 87. Sharuch Shalochem Lo Yivgoid, the Ash Nurecha. Your spirit should not rebel against your wife. Lisnoy Yosa, page 887, the very, very top of the Malbim, on the left column, the last two lines. Lisnoy Yosa Velevo, Acheris Timurosa, Acha Shakavanas, Habriacha Yoshatia, Shulishnem Ruach Echad Ruach Ava Uratzen. So if we just go back and read the pasuk, according to his interpretation, he has a whole new novel interpretation of this pasuk. He says, "V'loy echad asa," incredible. Echad asa usha'ar kama. Usha'ar. He puts a kama after the word usha'ar. It's a very choppy reading according to the Malbim. He's saying, "Was it not true that Adam harishon, according to the Malbim, the subject of pasuk tesvav is Adam harishon?" And Adam, and when it says the word Echad, it doesn't mean Adam, it means Adam and Chava. They were one body. Usha'or. Echad asa usha'or. They were one piece of flesh. It's a little choppy. Usha'or means he was one with his wife. Echad asa usha'or. Hashem made Adam and Chava as one entity. And Ruach loy, I assume he means to say that the word Echad, that it goes back, it is applied to the word ruach. V'ha'aloi echad. Also,
is connected with echad also in shawar.
It's also, that's what he seemed to say. That's the he's echad. Hashem made them one also. Ushaor ruach lo. I don't know how to translate it exactly. I don't know. So he's ready to tell you too much time on this. The basic idea is he's saying is that Adam Harishon and Adam and Chava were created by Hashem as one body. The flesh and the neshama. The physical body was one and their neshama was one. The word usha'ar means their physicality. Their body was one and ruach means their neshama. Hashem made Adam and Chava as one entity. Umo ho'echad mevakesh. What is the benefit the benefit of having a wife that's one, instead of having like animals where they're completely two independent things? You know the answer is what did Hashem desire by maybe I'm assuming now for the moment that according to the mountain, the word of Echad Avir refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu desire by making man in such a way where he is one with Chava, so that he will produce Zera Elohim? He will produce holy seed. Because if you have a union of a man and a woman who have nothing to do with one another, or let's say animals, the child is not a holy child. In order to create sanctity, the parents have to be united in one mission. They have a mission, a united mission in producing a child. But if the parents are not united in their mission, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen that the child's going to be Zera Elohim. And therefore, you people, by you marrying a non-Jewish woman, you are in violation of following in the minhag of Adam and Chava. By taking a woman that you have absolutely nothing to do with, a non-Jewish woman, you have no connection, not in the physical world with her, you're not a part of her family, and not in the spiritual world, you share different values, they worship idols, you worship Hashem, you are not following the ways of Hashem to imitate Adam and Chava, to marry as close to your family as possible, and it's going to result in having children that are going to be goyim. The nishmar tem, and don't tell me you can't do this. You can do this. You can do this. The nishmar tem beruchachem. You have to stand up to your yetzahara. You have to guard your taiva with an eishas meurecha al yivgod, and go back to your first wife. Go back to the first wife which is indeed member of your family, and you share the same values, the same hashkafa, and through her you will succeed, not through marrying a non-Jewish woman. Okay, so this concludes the Malbim. In Yiras Hashem, tomorrow we'll just touch some loose ends. We have the Mamore Chazal. No, but we don't have the Mamore Chazal. Okay, we'll see. I don't know if we can do the whole thing. That's not this. Mechashai is not exactly going to work for us here. Okay, we have to see the selective parts, maybe. And Chayim Sanach. And not much more. There's not much really more here, except for Mechashai. We'll see tomorrow. Let's take a very short break. I want to
ask about my ethical Chaim Zalman, my grandson, became a
question
last night.
Wait. Mordechai Mintz gets a Mazel Tov. His grandson became a chassan to who?
Chaim Zalman, Chaim Bavli.
That's your grandson.
That's the grandson.
So are you related to Rabbi Kahn? Are you related to Rabbi Kahn here?
Because
he's married to a garber. Rabbi Kahn's wife.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's he's not the Kohen. This garber is a Kohen.
This garber, they're Kohanim. That's the Kala is a garber. Your grandson. So your daughter is married to a garber.
Who's not a Kohen.
Who is a Kohen? Right, who is Israel? Garber is not right. He's married to a Kohen. He's a Kohen, but his wife is not a Kohen. So your daughter is married to a Garber who is a Kohen, and their son is Chaim Zalman, he said? Chaim Zalman is a Chosan, after father, and who is the Kala?
The Kala is Shani
Chafes. Shani Chafes, from where?
He's from
Cleveland,
Ohio.
Are the grandparents?
He learned with my Mahutin son, Moshe Schmelzer, when he rushed Chief
Very nice. In Ve'agevin, Dover Noam Miskayin, Mazel Shalom Achas.